If you go out looking for a really good first date, sometimes what you're doing is just optimizing for people who've trained themselves to be really good first dates. I sent her a compliment about her appearance, and she sent me an unflattering photo of herself because she felt like she was having a good face day. And I had maybe gotten a mistaken impression of her level of hotness, so she needed to correct it.
Our relationship was very difficult for a while. And I think despite that, I have been pretty bizarrely committed to it the entire time.
We are both extreme people, but we sort of go to different extremes. A lot of our early relationship was me being like, everyone in the world instantly connects with me. Why don't you? And I think like her early experience of the relationship was kind of the inverse, right? Of like,
yeah, just like, get out of my face, my guy.
On this episode of Modern Relationships, I sit down with Sasha Chapin and Kate Hall, who have been together for 3 years. Sasha is a writer and co-founder of a perfume company, while Kate is a former pro poker player and CEO of a foundation. Up ahead, we talk about radical honesty in relationships, why the Enneagram can help bridge extreme personalities and commitment over connection.
Sasha, Kate, welcome to Modern Relationships. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having us. Yeah. We've been looking forward to it.
Thank you.
You're my first guest who initially said no, but then we're like, hey, maybe this is interesting. Maybe we should come on and chat. So I'm honored.
Yeah, I think we were worried at first about like jinxing the relationship, and then we saw a bunch of other people doing interviews that seemed cool, so we decided to get over the aversion. But yeah, I was the one who's like, doesn't it seem a little bit too funny if we then break up?
Yeah, that is funny. If any couple ever breaks up from the show, I'll just remove the episodes.
Yeah, maybe every couple who's appeared on the show is jinxed. There's just going to be a wave of highly influential couples.
That'll be the Modern Relationships curse. Yeah, the curse of the show. That's funny. So we bring on couples on Modern Relationships and basically ask them what advice they have, both in terms of finding a great partner and how to think about how to pick someone or how to be someone worth picking, and then also how to make a relationship great once you're in one. So maybe let's start on the first one in terms of what can people learn from your experiences in terms of how you found someone amazing. Well, why don't you tell the story of how you guys found each other?
Sure. Okay. So I was not planning to date anybody seriously at the moment when Kate sort of came across my radar. I was 4 months out from the end of my first marriage. And I just settled into thinking, okay, I'm going to be single for a while and explore myself and take my time. And then I saw Kate on the internet and I was just like, who is this person? This person is really interesting. And shortly after that happened, she tweeted something like, in dating, I prioritize intelligence, kindness, and concern for others. And I don't really care about looks, money, and status. Where do I go for that? And thinking nothing of it, I just sent her a DM saying, yeah, I'm dumber than you probably, but I'm pretty nice. And I'm pretty concerned for others. Do you want to talk? And she responded, that seems plausible.
Romantic. It's important to be precise.
It's important to be precise. Yeah. Yeah. As far as I can tell, you're not straight out lying. But we just slipped into text communication and it felt really easy and good and interesting. Things felt really interesting right away. And then like 2 weeks later, I was at a conference in New York, shout out to Interact. And I made a playlist for Kate and I think she found that sweet. And she was just like, I don't know why you're not here right now. You want to come down here? And I was like, okay. And then our first day was basically me moving into this apartment for a week.
A week, yeah.
Yeah. And then we were engaged within 3 months, I think.
Yeah. That really kind of maybe gives you a misleading view of our relationship though. Like it was just this whirlwind romance where we were so into each other the whole time. Where I think like part of what makes our relationship unusual is that we really like didn't click. Immediately. We sort of like both felt like this is a person who's very interesting. This is a person who I think could move me closer to the person that I want to be. But we're so different on so many different dimensions that it was really pretty awkward for like the first couple of months between us. And then the next couple of years.
Yeah. I felt this weird thing about the relationship from like the first couple of days we were hanging out together, where I felt at once the sense of like inevitability around the relationship. Like, oh, I guess I'm going to be with this person for the rest of my life. That seems like what's going to happen here. And also like, why is that the case? Because from our surface level interactions, it's not at all obvious. Like we had really good chemistry on some levels, but not on other levels. Like our conversational styles were really different. We couldn't really figure out how to talk with each other or socialize with each other or like have dates. and I said a number of things really early on that I think just like horrified Kate.
What's an example?
One that really sticks out in my mind was something like, I mean, I like thought experiments as much as the next guy, but I would never actually make a decision on the basis of one.
Which might not sound like a really outrageous thing to say.
It totally doesn't, but it's so, so far from the mindset that I was starting out from, which is just like very oriented toward consistency with a set of philosophical commitments. But I was just like, whoa, this person is from a different universe.
Yeah. I also, shortly after we started dating, announced that I would never date a vegan again, at which point Kate mentioned that she was a vegan at that time. Since then, she has become significantly less vegan. But, yeah. You know, I was like, here's my red flag. And she was like, oh, I have that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, okay. But I don't know. The feeling of inevitability won out, I think, for both of us. Yeah.
And so you see all these yellow flags, maybe even some red flags. What explained the inevitability?
I think for me, it was more of a feeling. And for Kate, it was a pretty, like, I think Kate could give you the story that was in her head early on in the relationship. I think I would have a harder time. I can say now why the relationship has been really good. But at the time, it was just like, I think one thing that was really clear is there's no other Kates. Like, Kate is a singular person. And I had this sense of very much not being ready for a relationship and being under-equipped for a relationship with someone as different from me as she is. But I was also like, I've dated lots of cool people. I know what people are like generally. There's just no Kates. Like, I've got this opportunity. And I think one thing I am is pragmatic and opportunistic. And I was just like, well, I kind of got to take a shot at this, even if I don't quite understand why and I don't quite understand how it's going to work, you know? What was your story early on? You've said it to me before, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I think there are a couple of different aspects of it. So one is the thing that I mentioned of like seeing Sasha as somebody who was likely to move me closer to the person that I wanted to be. We have very different sets of strengths and weaknesses. And my weaknesses are around like feeling emotions and relating intimately to other people and prioritizing my mental and physical well-being. And those were things that Sasha was very good at in a way that was like not off-putting to me, was just like very generous of spirit and encouraging. And I could like hear him when he said certain things that I couldn't hear other people say in terms of like how I could improve my life. And then I think the other thing is just, I think I am just somebody who develops conviction quickly around ideas based on intuition, which is maybe a little bit surprising given how logic driven I can be in other areas. But I believe in God. I believe that God puts things in my path that are like good for me. And so when I believe that I've come across one of those things, I just sort of wholeheartedly embrace it and expect that it will work out. And then it so far has. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like another thing that applies for both of us is that for both of us, like we are both atypical choices in partner for the other historically. And both of us went through rough first marriages, different kinds of rough first marriages, but like valuable but challenging first marriages. And both of us were kind of humbled by that and thought, well, maybe I should do the opposite of my inclinations here. You know, there's that No Country for Old Men bit. If the rule that took you here, if the rule you followed took you here, what use was the rule? I think to a certain extent, both of us felt that about our personal lives. And so when we encountered the initial bafflement and all of the maneuvering we had to do to understand each other, it was kind of like, well, maybe this is the work we have to do to override our default inclinations, which have actually not served us super well.
I'm also a pretty extreme person. And I had spent like a lot of my adult life, after I got through the part where I was dating wildly inappropriate people, dating people who are really similar, we kind of like, with those people, we tended to make each other more intense in the same direction that I was already really intense. And Sasha was like an opposing vector that sort of pulled me a little bit back toward normal, which I think was a really good moderating effect on my life.
Yeah, I think one interesting thing is that like, we are both extreme people, but we sort of go to different extremes. Like absent supervision, Kate becomes hyper-rational and achievement-driven and completely ignores her psycho-spiritual experience in favor of doing the next thing exceptionally well. And like absent influence, I fall into hedonism and aestheticism and I'm trying to live the most beautiful and fun life possible, but it doesn't really add up to much and I just waste a lot of time. And so together we reach some sort of middle point that's like really fun. It just took us time to figure out how to balance our virtues as opposed to finding like our mutual strangeness is difficult.
There's this Joe Hudson quote I want to read, which is, we find ourselves attracted to certain people because we have an instinctual way of finding the person who can trigger us the best. And on the other hand, gives us the opportunity for mutual healing. And it is just interesting, this idea of, hey, we're attracted to a certain kind of person and maybe they're not the type of person we want to be attracted to or want to have a long-term partnership with. And there's some like readjusting or something that needs to happen.
Yeah, for sure. That quote perfectly describes our relationship. Good one, Joe. Nice job being pithy. Yeah, I think I spent the first 30 years of my life trying to compensate for a childhood where I was severely bullied and felt very lonely and was very unpopular by like reliably getting people's attention and learning how to like connect with people really fast. And Kate is a person who needs a lot of like private time and is a very like interior processor. And so a lot of our early relationship was me being like, everyone in the world instantly connects with me. Why don't you? And I think like her early experience of the relationship was kind of the inverse, right? Of like,
yeah, just like, get out of my face, my guy.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of intensity for somebody who is accustomed to spending a huge number of hours each day alone.
I think like, yeah, in congruence with what Joe Hudson said, like we've come to a place now where Kate's more willing to connect and I'm more willing to be separate. And that's like really healthy for both of us. That's the direction that both of us needed to move in. But we weren't going to do that on our own. We had to be forced into it by going through those triggering situations and adapting.
Yeah.
Sasha, you wrote in a blog post that our mutual friend Ava told you that you were seeking a 10 out of 10 sort of relationship right from the get-go, but maybe what you needed was a 7 out of 10, or need to be open to having that in the beginning and having it build up over time. And that was tough to hear in the beginning.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's me quoting Ava more than it is describing the relationship, but I think that gets at something, which is, I wouldn't describe it as 7 out of 10 because our early relationship was, I think, characterized by extremes for me. I was so interested in Kate and so attracted to her and like so convinced that the relationship could be so rich. And then in many dimensions, the relationship was really, really hard. So it was more like, in some ways it was 9 out of 10, in some ways it was a 4 out of 10. But I think overall, yeah, I had been sort of a romantic and I went through life looking for the thrill of instant connection and this experience where it all made sense and everything was going to be okay. And, you know, the lights were all turning green and you're speeding through all the intersections. And that was just like not the character of our early relationship mm-hmm. at all. I had to be ready
called,
for that.
What is it called? Like the
limerence.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That there wasn't any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like, the cool thing about our relationship is like, it feels like we're coming to the honeymoon period like now or like within the last few months, we've really like hit a peak. And I feel like that process of sort of slowly improving the relationship and coming to understand each other is so good because there are just peaks and valleys in relationships. That's just how it works. And I feel like we're more prepared for that. And also like, we don't take it for granted as much, you know?
Plus, you don't have the relationship like path of it's so great at first, and then it's just like a very slow disappointment forever.
Right. You thought you had glimpsed the promised land, but in fact, it was like the model development in front of a real estate development that was pretty shitty in the actual units, you know?
We'll get right back to the conversation after a word from our sponsor. Modern Relationships is sponsored by Relationship Hero, your personal relationship coach. It's an open secret in Silicon Valley that people are using these relationship coaches. Over 100,000 users are happy they tried Relationship Hero. You might be wondering, what is it like to talk to a relationship coach? Well, here's Jackie Pugh, a senior coach at Relationship Hero.
That's a really good question. Okay, I actually just got off a call with a client who was getting mixed signals from his ex. So she's the one that broke up with him, but then she kept sending him these really heartfelt, long, emotional messages at midnight, and then in the morning would act like nothing ever happened.
We've all been there. How do you recommend handling something like that?
So what we would do is we would want to hear exactly what's going on so we can help discern, is my client's ex, is she just trying to process her emotions and she's doing it via text message? Is she potentially trying to keep my client on the back burner? Or is she actually trying to reconnect? And if she is, then I help my client decide, you know, is this something that he actually wants to do, reconnect? And if so, why?
Thanks, Jackie. If you want to try your first one-on-one or couples coaching session, go to relationshiphero.com/modern. You'll get $50 off your first session if you use our link. Again, that's relationshiphero.com/modern.
I do just want to give the audience an image of how bold Kate is, according to Sasha's great blog post after the first Zoom call that you guys had together. Kate texted Sasha saying, we should make out, just stating a preference.
Yep, that me at my most charismatic, I would say. I'm not like a talented flirter, I would say.
Yeah. You have a very direct style.
But very direct.
I think is not flirtation. Flirtation is indirectness.
So actually, yes.
I don't think you really flirt, but. And it was funny because I ended that call being like, wow, Kate's so hot and she's so smart. And does she even like me at all? What's going on here? Which again, like part of the head trip of this relationship and what's been so fun is like, I've tried to develop a set of social skills that like speeds up people's schedule of intimacy. So they, I feel like I know them really quickly and
you
I feel like they
like
know
a
me.
A sociopath when you say that.
A little bit, yeah. I try to engender connection with my communication. But Kate has like a 2-year schedule of intimacy and there's no fast forwarding it.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
How do you think about gender roles?
Honestly, like this topic is one of the primary reasons that I wanted to come on your show, because I feel like people have very firm ideas about what gender roles are good and make people happy. And I feel like there are certain ways in which we conform to those gender roles, but there are a lot of ways in which our dynamic is definitely like reversed relative to the stereotype. And at the same time, it's like the best relationship I've ever been in, the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. And there are other models that are also extremely satisfying.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, like if you look at our, LinkedIn profile or whatever, or our like life history, like I wrote a memoir and I just launched a perfume company and I have a blog where I write about my
Meditation.
Feelings.
Yeah.
And Kate's the CEO of a foundation. She was a professional gambler. And yeah, like she's the serious introvert. I'm like the chummy extrovert. Uh-huh. If you look at, like, I feel like in our relationship, there is full outlet for all of my masculine energy and all of Kate's feminine energy. And that definitely gets fit in. But in terms of like life configuration, there's some flips there. And that turns out at least not to matter for me at my age. I just don't care. Like, I think I would have worried about caring earlier in my life, but.
Yeah. One thing that I, how to frame this. I think I always had a story in my head that I didn't care about making more money than the person I was with. And I didn't really like actually test that belief until this relationship, like in a serious relationship. And so I was always kind of like, maybe this is just a thing that I think about my preferences that isn't actually real. And I've discovered that I actually just don't care at all. And I'm super happy, like being in that kind of supportive role in the relationship. And Sasha has like many other supportive roles in the relationship, but it's kind of just like nice to realize that my actual preferences are aligned with what I thought was the case. And I wasn't like deluded about it.
Yeah. So I was previously in a relationship where I started off making more money than my partner. And then she went through a change in professional fortunes and ended up making more money than me. And she became unhappy with that. I think it left me with this idea that that actually does matter. But I think so much of that is self-inflicted. Obviously, people self-assign their worth based on their current income too much. And people anchor on like money too much as a life choice, vis-a-vis how much it actually matters to their day-to-day happiness. And so like, it shouldn't matter absolutely how many dollars somebody is bringing into the relationship. I think people just make it matter. And like in terms of Kate's professional expertise, like it's obviously just a plus to have a super competent life partner. I think if you're like a young man, there's a certain romance to the idea of taking care of a less capable partner and sort of shaping them and being the influence that provides order and stability in their life. And then you get older and you have more relationships and you're like, actually, it's just good to be with someone who can take care of themselves. Like the more total competence in the relationship, the better. And the more different areas of competence in the relationship, the better, you know?
What about just the level of busyness or like, was that tough for you, Sasha, just to be with someone so busy and so focused on like, was the relationship always enough of a priority? Or because that's something people, both men and women, of course, struggle with too, but especially when the women is.
For me, it's never been a big deal. I like having lots of friends and hanging out with lots of different people, having a life with lots of variety. I think quality time is more important to me than like the quantity of time. And, I think like part of the honesty in this relationship is that I feel like I can say everything that's going through my mind to Kate. She's like a perfect witness for my life and I to hers. And we can really sort of like engage with each other on a rich level. So even if we only have half an hour of time with each other a day, it feels really like the best part of my day.
Yeah. I think this is like, I have learned that this is true. Sasha has said that this is true all along, but I think we just like missed each other early in the relationship for a long time because I didn't understand what he was asking for. So he kept saying like, I'm not satisfied with the quality of our time together or like we're not connecting enough. And I took that to mean I should spend more time at home in his presence, having my mind half on work, but being like physically here so that he can talk to me about things that he wants to. And it turns out that was very counterproductive.
Right. There's this one weekend where we went to LA together and it was, at the time Kate was working at a startup and Silicon Valley Bank was going under. And so incredibly stressful weekend for Kate professionally. And so her story about that weekend was she was putting in a heroic effort, giving quality time to the relationship, like being with me. And then my story of that weekend was she was like not making eye contact that whole weekend, barely present in conversation, completely stressed out. It just took us like some time to really specify, Oh, this is what's important about quality time, not duration, but, you know, intensity and wholeheartedness.
And it was so surprising to me because I think that we're both really good at communicating the contents of our mind to the other person. But like we were starting from such different places and had such different assumptions about what words even meant that we failed to realize that we were just like solving different problems for a really long time. And from my perspective, yeah, I was like, I am putting so much work into this relationship, putting so much time into this relationship. Like what?
And I was like, smile at me, please. Yeah. Respond to the things I am saying.
Does that basically explain why the honeymoon has sort of happened over time or why it's gotten better? Just you guys understanding each other better?
That's a huge part of it. I think also just like due to historical circumstances that are really understandable, Kate is a bit slow to trust. And I think like, I think there's an ALO blog post from way back when about how one way you can organize relationships in your mind is that like some people are like guitars. You just pick them up and maybe you'll sound pretty good. And then some people are like zithers, like complicated instrument with the right inputs. Like the relationship is amazing, but you have to sort of fine tune the inputs. I think from my perspective, being with Kate is more like that. Like, you know, high upfront cost, but super, super high reward.
Nice. Take it.
Yeah.
Talk about, you said that Kate is a very honest person, and that was a bit of an adjustment for Sasha. Why don't you talk about what that was like?
Oh my God. There's so much to talk about here. So like, let's say you're in a heterosexual relationship, right? And your partner comes to you and says, should I lose weight? And the thing that goes through your head is, well, the current weight you're at is perfectly attractive to me. To hit your peak attractiveness with me in particular, it actually would be nice if you lost 10 pounds and went to the gym. But like, honestly, it's fine. You can take it or leave it. It's just something you could do if you wanted to. That's what goes through your head. What should leave your mouth in most heterosexual relationships is, you're perfect, baby. You look beautiful the way you are. And maybe in that situation, your partner will hear like a subtle undercurrent and like pick up on what's going on. If you're with Kate, what she actually wants is the actual contents of your head and like all of them, and will be like deeply upset if she finds out that you didn't say everything. And that was like such a mindfuck, because I think I thought of myself as an honest person, and I was, relative to the honesty requirements of most relationships, but not relative to the honesty requirements of a Kate relationship. Yeah.
To be clear, this is something that I like say up front, say over and over again. I think it just takes time to like percolate, but it's not like, I don't know. It's not like I sprang it on you that this was like, I was betrayed by you or something like this.
No, I think that's right. But I think it's also like a lot of people in relationships will tell you, I want the absolute truth. I want you to be honest with me. And they are lying. And maybe like 30 years into a relationship, they want the kind of honesty that you want in year two, which we're now at, which is amazing. Like, I think the level of honesty in this relationship is so good. They're switching costs over to that way of being. It's uncomfortable. And there are so many moments of me saying something honest and me being like, okay, is this the moment when Kate's going to finally decide that this is too much and I'm a horrible person because I've said the thing that's really going on? And to your credit, I don't think there's a single time when you haven't rewarded honesty, which is pretty amazing.
Nice. I feel like this relates to another thing that we needed to work out in our communication styles, which is for whatever reasons, historically, I've never learned to like do a lot of the stuff in communication that other people seem to intuitively know how to do, which is like layering the conversation with compliments and affirmation. Like, I hear what you're saying. I like you, you know, like explicitly and implicitly. Like, I just was really starting from a very low level of that.
Not only a low level of that, but sort of like a background belief that was insincere.
Yes.
And that you shouldn't have to do that because it's just bad. It's manipulative.
Yeah. I have this, I think I'm getting a lot better at it. This sort of intuition that any sort of preening that you do with the other person to make them feel better so that they will like you more is a form of manipulation. And I just like, don't like to do it. And Sasha was just like, that's just what communication is. That's what people want. I'm telling you, please manipulate me. I don't care. And it still took a while for me to overcome that aversion, because it's like so woven into my psyche and the way that I see the world. But I think I've made some significant progress there.
Oh, I think you're excellent at it now. Yeah.
Did you guys have a woo gap in your relationship, or were you always on the same level of woo?
Oh, that's interesting.
I think we've always been on the same level.
We're pretty similar, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that one thing that unites us is we've both had some pretty intense spiritual experiences and both take that part of our lives pretty seriously. The way it shows up for us is different, but like talking about God and our relationship to God and how it informs our priorities is like a regular fun conversation topic. Mm-hmm. That's really nice. Like, I think one thing about this relationship that is super cool is that superficially, we're different in a number of obvious ways, but we also share some really uncommon similarities. Like, there are some things I can share with Kate that I feel like I can't share with that many people.
Most people in San Francisco are probably not believers in God, right? Or that's not like an active part of their life. So I'm curious to hear a bit more about how it does inform your priorities or inform your life or part of your relationship.
Do you want to try taking that first?
Sure. I think we both had different personal experiences of God and maybe even slightly different reference. Like, when we're talking about God, we're talking about like slightly different experiences or slightly different things. There's enough overlap. And I think for both of us, our understanding is that like the only motive in life that's not bullshit is bringing yourself more into alignment with God. That's an ongoing day-to-day thing for us that's very real.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it is, it certainly is unusual, at least in our social circles, I would say. Like, I don't meet many other people who will say that they believe in God, which is part of the reason why I'm like, hi, I believe in God, which can be like a little bit off-putting too, but I'm just like, I'm here.
You guys are big fans of the Enneagram. Talk about why you're fans of it and why you think it's sort of instructive in relationships.
Sasha has totally converted me to this, by the way. I was just like eye roll all the way when he first introduced me to it. And I've become a huge fan and use it across my like personal and professional relationships now. But he's the expert.
I wouldn't say I'm an expert. I would say I'm an ardent amateur. I think the Enneagram does a number of really powerful things as a personality system. I think it does a great job of locating the ways in which people's dysfunctions are intimately tied to their strengths. And I think it also provides a non-pathologizing language for people to mutually identify the ways that they're crazy, which is especially useful in relationships between two people whose Enneagram types are very different. Not everybody finds that the Enneagram accurately captures their personality, but for a lot of people, they find that there is one type that it kind of stings, like reading the description feels uncomfortably intimate. And that's both me and Kate. So I'm a very stereotypical type 7. She's a very stereotypical type 1. And they're opposites in some ways. Type 1 is perfection-oriented, moralistic, tight, tense. And 7 is sort of loosey-goosey, enthusiastic, childlike, self-justifying, rationalizing. There are fears that shape Kate's world and behavior like so completely top to bottom that like would never occur to me as things to be scared about. And vice versa.
That's where like the fear of saying nice things to people might make them like you comes from for me. It's this like hypersensitivity to anything that might sort of corrupt my motives. And it is pathological on my part. I recognize this. Yeah, it goes all the way down.
Yeah, totally. And similarly, like for a 7, if you're in an unhealthy place, there's a feeling of like, my life isn't nice right now. I'm not connecting with my wife right now. Like, everything is terrible. The world is falling mm-hmm. apart. I will be alone forever. There's this focus on immediate experience rather than principle, which yeah, is sort of the opposite. So it's really interesting. And again, it's a spread of strengths and weaknesses that if combined harmoniously makes for a really rich relationship, but it can also lead to like real failures in understanding if you don't point it out. And the Enneagram does a good job of pointing it out.
Yeah, it is funny. I was also dubious about it until someone who's, you know, really into it told me, you know, read the description for 3. And I was like, okay, it kind of sounds like me. And then read the description for what happens when a 3 dates an 8. And I was like, okay, I guess that describes a previous relationship. And then a 3 and a 4. And I was like, God damn it, that describes another one. Why is this thing so accurate? So yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
The relationship stuff with the Enneagram is really mind-blowing. And I can't take credit for this thought. My friend Graham, who's a huge Enneagram fan, pointed this out to me, that normally our thinking about what happens in relationships is so gendered, but the Enneagram stuff about what like one type will look like with another type works no matter what the gender arrangement is, which is like crazy, that it so identifies patterns of behavior that transcend gender. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I find it to be like useful in relationships. It's useful in friendships. Sasha's co-founder at the perfume company was somebody who I really just like bounced off of for the first while because we were so, so different. And I think that the Enneagram made it easier for me to appreciate her because it made it seem like there are like different modes of being psychologically healthy. And one is like the mode that I aspire to when I'm at my best. But there are like many other ways that people can look when they are at their best. And like, you can learn to appreciate those and learn to appreciate the differences. It sounds really, really basic, but it somehow like unlocked something for me where I was able to just like, I don't know, like deepen the relationship with her. And I found it really useful for professional relationships too.
I feel like there's a midwit meme of the way one looks at people where the ends of the curve on both directions, like the middle is people are all basically the same deep down. And on the ends of like the bell curve, it's people are actually quite fucking different. And the Enneagram offers a more sophisticated way of like understanding people's different motivations than the default way, which is just, I think, to be alienated by the fact that other people refuse to behave in the same way that you do.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating. Do you think would people date the same Enneagram as them? Or I don't know if you guys have done that, but is that, does that not work? Like, do you need more polarity or how do you think about sort of similarity versus complementarity?
That, I mean, that's a lot of what I had in mind when I said I felt like in previous relationships where like two vectors pulling in the same direction. I definitely have dated some ones seriously in my life. And I think we have generally reinforced one another's craziness and not been like the healthiest pairs of people. I think Sasha's experience is just like, he has no real interest in that.
Yeah, it's sort of nearly diagnostic of an Enneagram 7 woman to me. If I meet somebody and I get along with them like super fast and Kate's like, you have a crush on them, but they feel no romantic attraction to them at all because it's just two people being extremely chatty and outgoing towards each other. And there's no negative space. There's no attention. I have like once dated someone who's an Enneagram 7 and it was a really funny relationship because like, we dated for like 3 weeks and we just kind of wandered away from each other, like mutually ghosted. And then we ran into each other at a party and we were like, remember when we were dating? Are we dating? I guess not. Okay, cool. Like there was no grip. And so yeah, I think some negative space, some difference is like important for me romantically. And I think most people.
Yeah.
Talk about how you've both grown from the relationship or changed or evolved, you know, almost 3 years. And one thing you alluded to earlier is Kate is prioritizing well-being much more. But what when you just talk about that more broadly, how the relationship has changed you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the primary thing that the relationship has done is it's taught me both to prioritize and how to connect to people. I think this has been, it's sort of like a constitutional weakness that I have that has been reinforced by various events in my life that have made me like more reluctant to connect with people. And I think that before Sasha, I would have been pretty happy to just like live the rest of my life that way. I was a pretty solitary person. So I was genuinely quite happy, but I was quite solitary, quite in my own mind, quite focused on like what was in front of me and not the people who were around me. And I think that like all of the ways in which Sasha is able to connect to the world and the experiential value that he gets out of that and the richness of his life has prompted me more in the direction of like prioritizing not just our relationship and connection in our relationship, but prioritizing like friendships and connection within friendships and just like overall having a richer life and more insight into what is going on underneath my own surface, which I was like more blind to, I would say, when our relationship started.
Oh, that's really nice.
Right.
Good job, our relationship.
Yeah.
On my side, Kate's devotion to truth and seeing the world clearly is really inspiring. Kate has like a level of top to bottom integrity that I think few people I've ever met possess. She really like lives up to her ideals. And I think like it inspires me to be a better person and to look more frankly at like the way I am and my actual nature and what I actually want. And apart from that, like I'm someone who I think strategically sometimes self-deprecates or takes myself less seriously as a method of self-defense. And I think like Kate saw the potential in our relationship, but also the potential in me really early on. Like, I think like early on, I was like, wow, Kate is this force of nature in the world. And I'm just this wacky writer guy bumming around living in Montreal. Like, and Kate saw me as she sees herself. Like Kate sort of like refused to believe in the limitations I was placing on myself. And as a result, I've become just like more agentic and more confident and have higher aspirations in terms of like what I want to do with my life, which is really wonderful.
Oh, nice. That's yeah. Nice.
When you think about when you are envisioning the future of your marriage and then the rest of your life, what comes to mind? Are kids in the picture? Are you living somewhere else? What how do you think about the future?
I think like kids is a really interesting topic. I think we can both see potential worlds in which it makes a lot of sense. I think we can both see potential worlds in which it doesn't. One of the particular things that unites us, I think, is a real attitude of surrender towards life, where we're both just kind of okay with whatever happens and we'll see what happens. And we're not going to like insist on one version of reality over another. Both of us have been through so many crazy life changes that like, I don't know. We don't have like a giant hole in our lives. And I think we're aware of like the compromises that would come both with and without having children.
And to be clear, like just sort of happening to have children doesn't really happen when you're over 40, which I am. But like, I think the idea is that at some point, maybe it will just seem like an obviously good idea to both of us. And, you know, I have lots of young and healthy eggs on our eyes.
Yeah, we might count on modern fertility technology and or the assistance of another person in this process. I think like much like our relationship is not conventional and we're extremely happy with it. Like if we ended up in a relationship where Kate felt like a conventional mom in a nuclear family, that would be just like ruinous. Like that would be a lifestyle that is like so not how we are oriented ourselves or towards each other, and like it just wouldn't make us happy. It wouldn't be good for anybody.
Yeah, I just really don't think that I would be happy as the primary caregiver for a child, and I've basically felt that way my entire life. I've always had sort of like ambivalence around it. Like maybe I would really love having children, but everybody who knows me well has said, like, I think you would be really unhappy as a mother. I don't think you should have kids. And so, like, if you keep hearing that from people who know you well and who have kids, like, I believe it. And that sort of resonates for me, too.
Yeah, our model of a world where we have children involves, like an ADU where Kate can be in solitude. And I'm wearing a baby Bjorn a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And we have help. And we're, like, living around friends who have kids. And we, like, distribute care a fair amount.
Yeah.
Which is possible. It could take some doing. I don't know. I think a thing that's really exciting about our relationship in general is that, like, the future doesn't seem like a very limited place. Like, we both have a lot of capabilities. We're both working on things that are potentially really exciting. And, like, I just see the future is a place where we grow a lot together and do a lot of really interesting things. And like, that could mean kids, that could not mean kids. I think either way, I imagine something like really satisfying.
Yeah. Also depends just like how the world changes over the course of the next few years, which I'm excited to see.
Yeah. What an interesting time.
And if you guys had met like 10, 15 years ago, do you think you would have been together and just accelerated all that growth? And if you were single, accelerated all that growth? Or do you think, no, actually, we needed to become different people or have certain experiences?
Absolutely not. No.
I think we would have bounced right the fuck off each other. So like, what, 10 years ago, you were quitting law for poker?
Yeah.
Right. So you were this like professional gambler fresh out of a marriage, like making a bunch of money. And I was like just starting out my freelance journalism career, writing essays about my feelings for Canadian publications.
But like the life circumstances are less relevant than who we were at that point in time.
Sure.
And I was not about to be interested in somebody who was like super into meditation and I don't know, like extroversion and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, yeah, we were both just like much more extreme versions of ourselves when we were younger. And I think we've both moderated over time and become more tolerable to broader ranges of people.
Yeah. I think at that point, you were still relating to the world as a vending machine that would give you achievement points. And I was still relating to the world as a vending machine that would give me fun and connection points. Mm-hmm. I think we would have met and you would have thought, that guy's annoying. And I would have thought, that woman is no fun.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
That would have been the end of it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Related, but segueing to relationship advice for other people, I'm curious how you guys think about marriage, having both been previously married or marriage early, I should say. When you're advising your younger friends who are sort of like thinking about their life or planning, like, are you like, hey, you know, early marriage is good, or hey, make sure you really wait, you know, until you know, and spend a few years with them or something? Like, what are your thoughts there?
I think the only consistent piece of advice that I give people, like I don't pretend to know whether marriage makes sense for different people or not, but if somebody has been with their partner for a couple of years and they're essentially like on the fence about whether they want to be with them, my advice is just don't. There's so many things in your mind that are built to convince you that the situation that you're in is the right one for you. And if you can't tell if you're happy or not with the person that you're with, like, do yourself a favor. You will be able to do better than that on like an emotional level. I have like a strong presumption in favor of like, if you cannot be in the relationship, you should not be in the relationship.
Yeah, I think that's right. And being like happily single with a community of friends is better than being in like a committed relationship that sucks.
Yes, absolutely. Marriage, yeah. I mean, I think that the timing of our marriage was like affected to some extent by the fact that Sasha isn't a citizen, and we figured it would be convenient to do it sooner rather than later. But also, there's something that I find personally appealing about the idea of just like going for it, like making a decision that this is the person you are going to commit yourself to, and then carrying that intention through regardless of what happens. And I feel like our sort of level of buy-in, despite our differences and our commitment to making the marriage work, I think it got us through some periods where if we had been less than fully committed to the relationship, if we hadn't sort of mentally been like, I'm going to figure out how to make this work, we probably would have broken up at some of those points.
Yeah, there were really tough moments in the process of adapting to each other. Like, I think over the course of the interview, we've made it sound quirky and nice, and it has been, but it's also been really fucking stressful and painful and sad at times. And yeah, just deciding that we're going to make it work has kept us through together through that. And I'm really happy that it did. I think like buried in the question is like a question about like, do either of us regret our first marriages or feel like we in some sense made the wrong decision the first time? And I think in my case, the answer is no. Like, as I mentioned, my first marriage was challenging for a variety of reasons, but it really like grew me up as a person. I think prepared me to be the kind of person who could be like married to Kate and have a healthy relationship. And you know, some people are fast learners, some people are slow learners. I think I'm a slow learner, but I think overall people learn more from commitment than they do from not committing. And I think when I see my friends, and I see people going through life, I think one variable that really defines how well people do in life by any metric, like satisfaction, money earned, like whatever you want to do, is like the rate of learning. And people who like undercommit just don't learn as quick. Like, better to like commit to a difficult relationship, really go for it and learn a lot about yourself, than sort of waffle and wait for the right person. Nobody looks like the right person. And then like 3 or 4 years go by that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a similar take where my first marriage, I think, ended in a pretty unfortunate way, I would say, just as like a teaser that I won't follow up on at all. But the relationship itself really helped me grow as a person. And I think if it weren't for that, I would like most likely be a lawyer in DC, just like living in Bethesda or something, and I would have had a much more boring life. And I think that relationship sort of put me on a trajectory where I was able to do interesting and fulfilling things. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Quite apart from that, I think marriage rules. Like, it's so good to have solidity.
Such a wife guy.
I'm such a wife guy. It's so good to have solidity in your relationship and to make your relationship like a central part of your life. And I think a funny thing about me is I'm such a wife guy. I'm such a fan of like monogamy, and I have lots of like polyamorous friends, and their lifestyle like both like seems fun for them. Like they're genuinely enjoying themselves, but I'm also like the insanity of constantly shifting boundaries is weird to me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, the main point of my life is my marriage, and then everything else is oriented around that. And everyone else, like I'm loyal to my friends, I'm loyal to my family, but I know where everyone is, and everyone outside of that can kind of fuck off, like ultimately, in terms of prioritization. You know, there's enough depth in our relationship and all of the things it brings out in each other for, like, I would say many lifetimes, I hope many lifetimes, you know? So we've just got the one.
Share more nuance on the sort of if you're unsure after a couple years point, because if you mentioned after a couple months, you were perhaps unsure, or I don't know if unsure is the right word, but there was some difficulty when you talk to friends who are like, should I stay? Should I go? You know, maybe it's a few months. How do you think about that question?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Our relationship was very difficult for a while. And I think despite that, I have been pretty bizarrely committed to it the entire time, where from close to the beginning, I was just like, okay, I'm in it. And I'm going to like make this work on my end to the extent that I have any power over it. And so I was able to get to a really high level of conviction about the relationship, even though there were aspects of it that were really difficult. And I sort of like trusted us to over time be able to resolve the difficulties that we had, because we were both like really cared about one another, really wanted it to work, both really excellent communicators, I would say, in relationships, both committed to personal growth. I was just like, there's gotta be a way. And I think that there was a way, but I think if a friend has been dating somebody for a couple of years and they're just like, I don't know if this is like the person, like, how do you know if you want to spend your life with somebody? Again, there's just like so much loss aversion that your mind automatically does that. I just think it's really easy to confuse yourself into thinking that a not good relationship is an okay one, and not that easy to confuse yourself in the other direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's also like different forms of difficulty. So our relationship, like you can characterize the way I think of it in my head as of this moment is like puzzle difficulty versus slush difficulty. Like puzzle difficulty is like you're working on a puzzle and really hard, it's frustrating. You don't even know whether you can do it. Will the solution ever come to you? But it's also really interesting and you feel really motivated to give it a shot. I feel like that's one character of difficult relationships where it's like it's clear there's a lot of potential. It's clear that people are working on it. Just like there's some engineering problems that are really hard and require both people to confront some of their central dysfunctions, you know? And then there's just kind of slush difficulty where it's just not really there. Like the intimate life isn't really there. It's sort of there if you squint and like it's good for moments, but nobody's really excited about it. And it's sort of inertia and both people are growing like smaller and smaller as they contract away from this feeling that it's not working. And I've been in both situations, and from the outside, they can look similar, but from the inside, they feel like very different. You know, I think we've always been at puzzle difficulty, never slash difficulty.
Did you just make out this distinction?
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, how do you feel about the distinction?
I feel like it is an accurate categorization that I find aesthetically off-putting because of different categories.
Okay, we'll workshop it.
It feels like the nuance is that if your relationship may have had some difficulty, but it was still obvious. It was still like, hey, this is an amazing person. There's so much alignment there. We're going to make it work versus Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I never had a question in my mind about whether I wanted it to work and whether I wanted to do whatever was necessary to resolve my challenges with this person so that we could be as close as possible. It just took us a while to like figure out the route through everything. Yeah,
for sure.
What have we not discussed, if anything, that comes to mind that's worth sharing about either your particular relationship or things that you think, you know, an audience interested in how to be, you know, find and make a great partnership should hear?
So I think like one thing that this relationship has updated me on is I think it's often the case that people look for similarity in early connections and neglect complementarity. And the thing about optimizing for complementarity is it's harder upfront, but there's potentially more payoff because the relationship is larger. There's like more personality difference in the relationship. And so like when people go on a first date and it's like a little awkward, but the person is really interesting and they could potentially be a relationship prospect long-term, I'm a big booster of telling people like go on a second date, go on a third date, like try and figure it out. I think there can be toxic versions of this, right? Like the I can fix him mentality of like, if I try hard enough, there's a relationship there. But I think if both people are committed to growth and figuring it out, like people have a lot more potential surface area for relationship than they think they do. Another thing that I think is super interesting about our relationship is I think often people are eager to complain about somebody's weaknesses without seeing how the other side of that weakness is a strength. So one thing that I found difficult to handle about our relationship for a long period of time was that Kate is not a natural consoler. You know, like if you've had a stressful day, if you're feeling sad, Kate is not necessarily the person who's going to like hold your emotions and really sympathize and like feel it with you. It's just not like her inclination. Not that she doesn't care, like you care a lot, but I think like just that way of communicating re-emotions is like not your natural strength. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Kate is really devoted to the truth and she's not going to sugarcoat things for you. And as a result, like I can count on Kate for like amazing counsel and a second set of eyes on my life. And notice that I am moving farther and faster in many domains, professionally, personally, because I like confront the difficult thing more quickly. And that's a direct result of Kate being kind of shitty at the consoling thing, right? You can't untangle those things. And there's this like Kurt Vonnegut bit about relationships, which I think is one of the great bits about relationships. He says like, you know, we used to live in villages all together and we hung out with our spouses and a bunch of other people. And now we're in nuclear families and we're sort of cordoned off. And so many relationship conflicts come down to the accusation, like you're not enough people. and I think like over time I've learned like, okay, Kate is not good at the consoling thing. I can get that elsewhere. I can get that from friends and I can lean into the ways in which this is a strength in Kate.
Yeah.
Go on.
I feel weird following that up because that was such a nice, clean way to end. And that was so beautiful, but I'm going to keep talking. The thing that I was thinking about that I think has probably come across implicitly, but maybe not explicitly in the course of the conversation is I think that most people have a perspective on relationships that says that commitment should flow from intimacy and connection. And my perspective, like just descriptively, has been that intimacy and connection can flow from commitment instead. And I think that that's not like a view that I see expressed much, if at all, in like the dating world around me, maybe in other cultures, but not our own. And so something to consider, I suppose. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. If you don't mind me following up on your follow-up. I think somebody said this, I think it was default friend. It feels like a default friend remark that like, if you go out looking for a really good first date, sometimes what you're doing is just optimizing for people who've trained themselves to be really good first dates, right? Like someone who is good at reliably generating that immediate spark may or may not have really good long-term partner skills. They are different skills. Doesn't mean that they don't have them. Like I think limerence and immediate connection and all those things can actually sometimes gesture towards a magical world that's on the other side of that, but sometimes not. Like, it's just, I think, a more neutral signal than people think.
Yeah. And I feel like, to some extent, my sort of pathology around authenticity dictated that we skip a lot of that, like, early stuff. Like, I was like, I don't want to go on romantic dates. Like, I don't want to flirt. I don't want to get dressed up for each other. I want our relationship to be exactly how it's going to be in 10 years. And we can really try this out. And that's like not very romantic or everybody's cup of tea. But I think it did have the effect of giving us information on whether it was somebody that we could actually imagine like building a life with.
Yeah. So just so the viewers understand how intense this tendency was on Kate's part, immediately after first Zoom call, when she said we should make out, I sent her a compliment about her appearance, and she sent me an unflattering photo of herself because she felt like she was having a good face day. And I had maybe gotten a mistaken impression of her level of hotness, so she needed to correct it. I think like the first time we hung out, you wore like an ill-fitting t-shirt that was like the color of like a hospital gown. Like, not only like no attention paid to like gussying yourself up for me, but if anything, like not picking the most flattering thing in your wardrobe. Yeah. Which again, like at first was sort of like, sort of like when you're going up the stairs. Pardon me?
She reverse catfished you or something.
At first I was like, where's the display? I've come to expect a display that teaches me that I'm worth something because I can provoke a display from somebody. But then again, like they're switching costs when switching over to extreme honesty, but when you get there, it's really nice.
Yeah. One other takeaway I'm also getting from, and you mentioned it earlier on, Kate, in terms of the gender dynamics, just sort of, but it's been a theme throughout, like be more open-minded to who you can be attracted to. And, you know, people typically think about themselves as having a type that they typically go after. I heard someone say something like, maybe that person is not your type. Or maybe consider that they might not be your type if you keep dating the same version and it doesn't work, whether it's on the gender dynamics or, you know, any sort of personality type or similarity versus complementarity. Maybe be more open-minded to switching it up.
I think my personal romantic history is a testament to the fact that what you expect to work doesn't always work and isn't always the best thing for you.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Sasha and Kate, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your wisdom with us.
Thanks for having us. This is really fun. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Modern Relationships. Please make sure you're following on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you have a chance, leave us a review or comment on this episode to let me know who else you'd like to hear from on this show. Modern Relationships is a podcast from Turpentine, the network behind Econ 102, Upstream, and Turpentine VC.